You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-fits-all branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code POD20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code POD20 for 20% off your first product.
Missing this?
When that didn't materialize, I think both Paulie and myself probably looked at each other and kind of thought, what next?
And get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. A more electric team up than Salah and Mane. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
Now then, you're very welcome back. Stephen Kenny took charge of his first Republic of Ireland training session this morning. They'll train again tomorrow before flying out to Bulgaria. His first match in charge on Thursday. In the meantime, this evening, there is this much anticipated FAI EGM. Nathan Murphy is over in Abbottstown. Good evening.
Good evening, Joe.
What fun and games lie ahead this evening?
Yeah, nights like this always strike fear into the hearts of anybody who covers Irish football. I'm not of an age that I remember the night of the long knives that went on for, I think, a dozen hours and was in the very early hours of the morning before eventually Joe Delaney and Louis Kilcoyne were got rid of. But it lives in infamy in Irish football, I think, in 1996. I was there the night Steve Staunton was fired in the Crown Plaza in Santry from 3 in the afternoon till 3 in the morning. Still quite bitter about it. I had a ticket for Arcade Fire in my back pocket, who were playing in Dublin that night. Oh. Missed the gig. And eventually at about 2:30 in the morning, John Delaney emerged to announce what we all already knew was going to happen, that Steve Staunton was gone. The expectation is tonight shouldn't be quite like that, that what happened over the weekend in terms of the compromises that were made with term limits, that it should be an agreement. They should get the 2/3 majority they need at this EGM to essentially save the FAI, to avoid it moving into insolvency. But you never know until you know with the FAI. There's been so many twists and turns and there's been so much infighting over the last few weeks and months that there's always a worry that something may backfire. But if it does go through, it really would be a pretty seismic day, I guess, for Irish football. A new era potentially on and off the pitch.
So that compromise you mentioned over the weekend there, the FAI, they announced that the government is also satisfied for council members with more than 10 years service. They can now stand for re-election as long as their term ends by 2022. Previously, they would have been out the door. Thanks very much. There's a term limit of 10 years. So they can now stand for re-election, and that's a change which will hopefully sway a few more voters. 206 members are eligible. They need a 2/3 majority. What's the run of the evening or the schedule? When does this get underway? It's now happening by video. It's underway.
It is, yeah. So it was due to start at 6 o'clock. I think it started about half an hour late. Okay. Obviously, like everything else now, the government restrictions mean that it is, by and large, a Zoom call, a pretty large Zoom call as well. So I hope and trust they're in charge of that so it doesn't drag on. Certain members of the board are here. Roy Barrett is here, the chairperson, Gary Owens, the interim CEO, the president, Jerry McEnany, and then you have the vast majority of delegates are calling in on Zoom. So it started pretty much an hour ago. The expectation was it might only take an hour and a half, 2 hours, all going well. Reading some of the insight from Dan McDonald there, there seems to have been some questioning of the big story of the last few days, which again has been about Roy Barrett's appointment and how that came about, considering he wasn't on the initial shortlist and conversations that were had with Bank of Ireland and who recommended him ahead of the restructuring of the bank loan. No write down in that bank loan. So he's been questioned about that. And listen, if this goes through, it'll give some immediate certainty of survival for the FAI. It won't answer all the questions around who continues to govern the FAI. I think they're going to last. And also, in the current climate economically, there's still going to be a lot of issues for the FAI going forward. Okay, they will have that government funding back, which is absolutely crucial. Well over 30 million coming their way from the FAI in terms of state aid. They've had their fundraising frozen fundraising frozen for well over a year at this stage. So they need desperately to get access to that. And you would imagine that that need has been re-emphasized to all the delegates tonight, that if they don't do this, well, God knows what happens to the FAI over the coming days and weeks.
Yeah. And maybe that's almost the best summary of the situation. You get the distinct impression that there is still lots of rancor behind the scenes. There are misgivings in various quarters about Roy Barrett, Gary Owens and Niall Quinn, how they got into their positions and their intentions going forward. You get the impression many people are unhappy with the you know, 6-6 board, with the term limits, all of this stuff. Mm. And yet, ultimately, it's, well, we've got to vote this through because, frankly, we just need the money and we'll sort out the mess after we get the money. So tonight, they get the money and now they have to sort out the mess. Like, do we know, for instance, the intentions of Roy Barrett, Gary Owens, Niall Quinn in any concrete way regarding their futures in the association?
Well, Niall Quinn has obviously been the most public and was talking over the weekend that once tonight is done, he will see what his role is. His job as deputy interim CEO is, I think his contract is up, so he'll have to decide. There's still the job of permanent CEO to be appointed. Gary Owens may well be in the running for that, so he may stay. Likewise, Roy Barrett, or he may look at the controversy that is there and suddenly very much finding himself as a public figure. One of the things that was said about Roy Barrett when he got the chairperson's role is that he was a very private man, obviously a successful businessman. That's obviously changed quite quickly. This is a very public role, and he's finding himself on the front of many papers every weekend. So he'll have to consider his position as well. So I think that is what will dominate after this. But as you say, it is just getting that deal done, though others would obviously question whether, you know, you look at where the FAI is financially, their main source of income in terms of match revenue is gone for 2020. Mm. God knows how it's looking for 2021. They still have to pay off that Bank of Ireland loan, although be it guaranteed by UEFA. So it's not going to be smooth running. But even from talking to staff at the FAI, I think they feel that this will be at least some sort of a full stop, and they can start to plan for the future, even in terms of what the organisation looks like to the outside world. Maybe in times to come, in not too distant future, there may be no FAI. They may need to go for that rebrand like the Olympic Council of Ireland did, just in terms of attracting advertisers and attracting sponsorship. But that is all dependent, I think, on tonight going according to plan.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll get you on as soon as there's white smoke. And like I said, Gary Owens is going to join us on the football show maybe around 9:30. So there's many a question to put to him. Meanwhile, you were at Stephen Kenny's first training session this morning. Adrian Barry earlier on, very impressed in the snippets he saw that players were passing the ball to each other. I mean, they've generally done that in training down the years. So, we'll wait and see for match time. What was it, the deal? Usual kind of first 15 minutes and then you're gone?
Yeah, over the years, there have been different ways of watching Ireland training sessions. Trapattoni, if I remember correctly, you see the last 15 minutes. And again, you would know the team because there'd be 11 in bibs and 11 not in bibs. Yeah, oh, Robbie Keane and Davy Duffer wearing a bib.
You get to watch the match.
Essentially. So you'd come out knowing the team. By and large, you get the first 15 minutes. That was the case again today. It looked to be a very well-organised and thought-out session, as you would expect when you've had pretty much 4 months to plan for it. It was interesting in that the players warmed up in this huge indoor arena. I don't know if you've been out in Abbottstown lately in the National Sports Campus. For anyone who hasn't visited, you can drive in and around, I think, in general. You should come for a look, because every time you come, it's more and more impressive. And the IRFU and the FAI share a huge indoor facility. So the players did their warm-up, came out. Stephen Kenny gathered them all in the middle. And you could just about hear Stephen Kenny saying, "Everything we do today, we do with intensity." And he seemed to be going through what the plan for the session was. We'll do some 11v11. We'll go into smaller groups. And then what you saw in those videos was essentially just another part of the warm-up with a ball at their feet, little quick-fire passing, 20-yard sprints, that sort of thing. There was no real indication from that. But listen, everyone was full of smiles. There was a lot of conversations going on, particularly between Keith Andrews and Stephen Kenny. Damien Duff and Rory Higgins, who's essentially the opposition analysis, were deep in conversation as well. So, as you would expect, it's the first day.
Yeah.
Everybody's got a smile on their face. Everybody wants to see exactly what's going to happen. And yeah, definite buzz around the place. I was out here yesterday for his first press conference, and you could sense the excitement from him that it was finally here, that he was getting to meet the players for the first time last night for a pretty intense week, I think, as well. The way Darren Randolph was talking today, I was asking were there any initiation ceremonies or a few songs, the usual thing you would get, and he was saying no, it was sort of a team meeting with Stephen Kenny outlining what his vision is and how he wants them to play. And listening to Darren Randolph and some of the other players today, it's very clear they know what Stephen Kenny wants. They're all talking about a more possession-based game of not sitting back anymore and being well-organized and trying to keep a team at bay. They were all talking, as Stephen Kenny has, pretty much word for word the way Stephen Kenny has for the last couple of years, of changing how we approach these games, of trying to get on the front foot early, which is music, I think, to all of our ears. As you said earlier, there's no guarantees in international football, but I think this is a good week to start. Bulgaria, an away trip, so does that a kudos if you can win away from home already. Mm. And Bulgaria, as we saw last October, like, there's no star player in this Bulgarian side that we're fearful of. Mm. You get a win there, you're at home against Finland, and I think they'll be confident of 4 points at least from these two games.
Yeah. Well, to give people a sense of what Stephen Kenny was talking about in his press conference, needless to say, the question of quality came up. Do the team have enough quality to play this more expansive brand of football?
Listen, we have a lot of good players in the international team. We have players that are playing at, you know, in the English Premier League and in the Championship, and we've got players playing at a high standard. Yes, we haven't got that many players playing in the Champions League, but we have players playing with really good clubs in the Premier League and in the Championship. We've got a very, very players that love playing for Ireland. You know, we have it's the pinnacle of their career to play for Ireland. We know that there's 8 games now coming up in the next 3 windows. We know that the Nations League is important for us because it's a World Cup playoff. Is a possibility if you win the group, which is a huge incentive. We haven't been in a World Cup since 2002. We know that the European Championship playoff is the thoughts of us not being in Dublin next year in the European Championships would be, you know, it'd be such an amazing experience that we should do everything, you know, collectively to try and make that happen for ourselves, because that's what we want. We want to be in the European Championship. We've got a tough draw. We have to win 2 significant away games, away to Slovakia and away to Bosnia, which we haven't looked like doing for a while. And I think it's for a long time. And I think, but we have to, just these games against Bulgaria and Finland are hugely important in their own right, because of the Nations League competitive games, because of the World Cup playoff, but also gives us an opportunity to put, you know, to formulate the team and get it ready for the playoff against Slovakia also. So it's a good opportunity in that regard.
Kenny Cunningham was on with yourself and Jared this morning, Nathan, on OTBAM. He reckons Matt Doherty will start ahead of Seamus Coleman, that Kenny will go with the flat back 4 and Doherty will get the nod. He was asked here about Doherty's move and whether he'll be Ireland's starting right back.
It's certainly you know, interesting move for Matt. He's been a tremendous servant to Wolves, really. He's been he's had a great 10 years there. Been in League One with them after moving from Bohemians, and I think you know, credit to, you know, Mick McCarthy took him initially at Wolves, and you know, did very well, and obviously he's pushed on in since that, and I think he's pushed on over the last number of years. He's been really, his number of assists and goals, goal scoring fullback, you know, and I think if your fullbacks are creating scoring goals, it's a real asset, and I think it's great value for Tottenham. I think it's a great deal for Tottenham. Yeah, well, there's tough decisions in all areas, there's no doubt. I think right back has been a particularly strong position for Ireland. It's probably the strongest out of all the positions, because Cyrus Christie has had a really good, strong end of season at Fulham. And we could actually have 4 right-backs in the Premier League next year, between Matt Doherty, Seamus Coleman, Cyrus Christie and Darragh O'Shea. So, which is unbelievable, really. And it's quite conceivable that that could happen. And I think, so it is an area. Matt, obviously very undervalued by Ireland, probably. Only 3 competitive starts for Ireland. He's 28 years of age. So I think that's, it's quite a stark statistic, really. And I think but at the same time, Seamus has been an outstanding player for Ireland for a number of years, and brilliant captain. So it's a good position to be in.
It sure is. Jeez, a fifth of the right backs in the Premier League. We have a fifth of the Premier League's right backs. Seamus Coleman's still one of our better players, but he finds himself up against, after Trent Alexander-Arnold, the best right back in the league, probably.
He does. But Seamus Coleman, Stephen Kenny has said, is his captain. Now, whether that was decided early because, well, Seamus Coleman is the leader of this squad regardless of whether he's playing or not, and wants him to have that role in the hotel, or whether he's saying that because he intends to pick Seamus Coleman. We're only really going to find out on Thursday night. I wouldn't be surprised if he plays one in one game and one in the other. This is still the start of the season. Matt Doherty's just back from holidays. Seamus Coleman's just in pre-season. And there's no reason, maybe Seamus Coleman is better suited to the away games, where as much as Ireland want to get in the front foot, you're not going to see a huge amount of the possession. But at home then, Matt Doherty plays in that role. The talk about Matt Doherty was interesting. You didn't hear the clip there, but he was asked about Doherty's move to Spurs and where he sees Doherty fitting in there, because there's the concern that he's going to Jose Mourinho and will he end up in a more negative side, not as that right wing back we've seen marauding forward for Wolves, that actually be stuck as a traditional right back that maybe doesn't suit his skill set. And he was fascinating about going to Tottenham a couple of times last season and how different teams at international level and at club level use different parts of the pitch differently, and how Spurs, their defence, well, the left back Ben Davies tucks right in behind the two centre halves. You don't see him bombing forward too often, whereas watching Serge Aurier at right back, and almost all the time when Spurs had the ball, Aurier is in a line with Harry Kane right up the pitch, right in an attacking position. So both wing backs aren't treated the same. Both sides of the pitch aren't treated the same. And actually, Jose Mourinho plays his fullback right up there. And there is nobody better than Matt Doherty at that. And it was probably his clearest answer, because he'd obviously thought about this. And it's the one thing with Stephen Kenny, people are getting used to seeing him in public. And it was interesting listening to the pay-per-view yesterday of, listen, we're very much in the midst of this, so know Stephen Kenny, that Tommy Coughlin would say maybe the public haven't quite got to know Stephen Kenny as of yet. And probably when they watch him in public, at times he can come across maybe a little bit nervous, though I do think he's almost started to go down the Jim Gavin route of answering questions now. He kind of filibusters it and throws a lot of information at you. But when he's talking tactics, when he's comfortable, he's absolutely brilliant to listen to. And you get glimpses of that. Unfortunately, with the role now, you don't often get to spend that much time talking, because it's, you know, is James McCarthy fit? Which, it, actually, the good news from today is it does seem as though he is going to be fit. He trained, even though, from what Roy Hodgson said on Saturday, he was a major doubt, which would be a huge boost, because everything he said about James McCarthy is he'd be a central figure. So, yeah, I think there's probably a little bit of learning for everybody in watching Stephen Kenny, but a good buzz around the place, and particularly that news that James McCarthy is in, I think it'd be a huge fillip for him if he can start both these matches.
Okay, very good. Shout if there's news from the EGM. Nathan Murphy is out of Abbottstown for the evening, where nothing is happening thus far. We'll take a short ad break. Brandon Driscoll on the way after 8 o'clock, by the way, on the rugby.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. As obnoxiously passionate about soccer as Frank Lampard after the final whistle. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
I'm prepared to do anything I can.
Well, do it then.
Come see again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Welcome along to the Football Show. Very much an Irish football show this evening. Later on, Damien Delaney is going to talk to us about on-the-field matters. Stephen Kenny building up to his first game as Republic of Ireland senior manager on Thursday against Bulgaria. But off-the-field matters taking centre stage this evening. FAI members have this evening voted at the EGM to accept changes to the association's rules and governance structures. It paves the way for the FAI to receive around €35 million in state funding, 114 out of 123 present at the virtual gathering endorsed adopting the MOU. 8 voted against, 1 abstained. Nathan Murphy at Abbottstown this evening. 114 out of 123, Nathan, that's a pretty comprehensive and overwhelming vote. 94-odd%.
Yeah, good maths, Joe. It certainly was overwhelming, and it means that the FAI can start again in many ways. It means they will get access to that $35 million, and that the crisis that has really engulfed the organisation for the past 18 months, the financial crisis, well, there's a bit of a pause on that for the very least. We'll get into what COVID means potentially more long term, but they were facing certain insolvency within days, if not weeks, if this wasn't passed. And it does seem that those compromises that were met by the government over the weekend in terms of term limits, and that those council members can go and reapply for their position again before 2022, was what swung this and got it over the line. And as you say, it was a thoroughly resounding vote in the end. So that's done. They can move on. We just heard, and we'll hear in a moment from Roy Barrett, the interim chairman of the FAI. He's hoping that they can start to access funds from the government within a week to get that money down to grassroots level again. Also spoke about the certainty it gives to FAI employees, many of whom I've spoken to over the last week, who were desperate for this to go through so they can start to think again about the future, because they've been just putting out fires really since March of last year, since this scandal broke out. And this is something of a full stop. It is the FAI, so there's always going to be some sort of controversy. And even this weekend, we've seen a lot of that has been around Roy Barrett's appointment as the independent chairman and the influence of Patrick Kennedy, the head of Bank of Ireland, who recommended Roy Barrett for that role. And Bank of Ireland are the FAI's bankers. They're their main creditors. They have a debt of over 50 million. And does that fit in with the transparency you would accept from the new FAI? Roy Barrett very strong that he doesn't accept that, that he is an old friend of Patrick Kennedy, but that in terms of business, there had been no contact, that there is nothing underhand here whatsoever. And quite frankly, he felt you couldn't see what the fuss was about. But I'm not sure this is a story that will go away quite that easily.
And just before we hear you talking to Roy Barrett, this is a private meeting, obviously. Members can speak. And I think Mick Wallace, I saw somebody tweeting that Mick Wallace had been critical of the FAI, felt a debt write-down should have been part of the arrangement with Bank of Ireland. Do we have any sense, Nathan, of the atmosphere in the... see, it's a Zoom call, so who knows? Atmosphere is probably the wrong word. But were members speaking freely?
It certainly seems that way. As you say, Mick Wallace was one of those asking the question about the lack of a debt write-down. So while Roy Barrett went in and renegotiated the debt, and that debt is guaranteed by UEFA now, so it's not something that's necessarily massively hanging over the FAI, but there was no debt write-down despite the pretty shocking finances that the FAI were in. So I think there were a lot of questions, as you would expect, from the delegates. But I think it was made pretty clear to them that there had been some compromises over the weekend. And this was the deal. This was the deal, that not accepting this was pretty much unthinkable from an FAI point of view in terms of what it would mean to the organisation, to the staff of the organisation. And that forced this over the line. Coming out, Jerry McEnany was alongside Roy Barrett and they were all smiles. They looked very satisfied. I think Jerry McEnany, who maybe had certain questions around other aspects of the FAI, again, was one of those who felt it was now or never, that they had to get this through. And they did just that. But I think certainly the atmosphere afterwards, there were a lot of questions for Roy Barrett around this relationship with Patrick Kennedy and the influence of him ending up as the interim chairman. Or as the independent chairman. So I think this is something that there are probably going to be questions about over the next while. But in terms of the FAI, I think it's going to be a lot of big decisions for the FAI. They're a pretty toxic brand because of all that's gone on. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a renaming of the organisation potentially over the coming months and years, because Jerry McEnany made it pretty clear they need sponsors. They need to make it an attractive brand. They have a new era on the pitch that they feel they can really tap into, but they need to somehow get past this. They need to stop being front page news. They need to get back to the football being the story, which, well, for years, but particularly for the last 18 months, it's been anything but.
It sure has. Let's hear Roy Barrett then.
Well, Roy, the memorandum of understanding got a strong support this evening. You must be very pleased with how it went.
I am, and it's been a long process. There's been a lot of discussion and debate. It certainly raised emotions, and some parts of the memorandum clearly has. But you know, a light like tonight is a really positive thing. It's a really positive thing that there's such a strong endorsement of the changes. People have accepted them, and it's good for the organisation, and it's particularly good for the staff of the organisation, who have clearly been worried. So thankfully that worry is now put to bed.
Just how perilous were things if this hadn't been approved tonight?
Extremely.
And in terms of the staff then, and what this means from a day-to-day point of view, over the coming days and weeks, what will it mean to the FAI?
Well, what it means to the staff is that they now have a certainty of an outcome. They don't have the cloud you know, whether the MOU would be passed or not, with all of the implications that that would have brought. So now they can move on and have certainty in their roles and their responsibilities, and hopefully we can all move on together now.
The FAI still has a sizeable debt, even with this, and is also in a position where, in times of COVID, its main source of income in terms of matchday revenue is essentially gone for 2020 and possibly for 2021.
Yeah.
The challenge ahead in terms of finances, how great is it still?
It's significant. You know, and COVID hasn't helped, and I think at a level it's probably got lost in the debate, just the impact of COVID since the lockdown in March. And just as you say, like, it's such a shame that Stephen and the team start in Bulgaria on Thursday, which I'm really looking forward to. It'll be good to talk about football now, and Finland at the weekend, and we have no people who are able to attend that. So that's a real shame, and that's going to be a real challenge for the organisation.
I understand there were several questions about your appointment and the role of Patrick Kennedy within that.
Yeah.
From Bank of Ireland.
Yeah.
When did you first speak to Patrick Kennedy about this job?
I only spoke to Patrick once when I was approached by AMRAP. And I spoke with AMRAP. They told me that a number of people had recommended me, including Patrick. I talked to Patrick after that meeting for about 2 or 3 minutes, and that's what it was. So it, I think quite a lot has been made of it, and there's a bit of a conspiracy theory around it, but there's nothing untoward in my view, and certainly in terms of my dealing with Bank of Ireland or any other the stakeholders. You know, did it represent any form of conflict whatsoever? No, it didn't.
Did you not think at any stage when you're having that very short conversation with him that
I had
him being the head of the main banker for a debt-ridden organisation may well be a conflict, even viewed as a conflict from the outside?
Sure. But you have to remember, when I had that conversation, I had only just been approached. And what I did, having met AMRAP the first time, was said I would think about the role, and in thinking of it, I wanted to meet a number of people, including people from the FAI, from the accountants, Grant Thornton, from the department, for the ministers, from Sport Ireland, from you know, Mr. Horan, who did the governance reforms, to acquaint myself with all of the issues and make a decision as to whether I thought I could help the organisation or not. So in terms of did I think that meeting in any way compromised me, not at all, actually.
There's a lot of talk this week of a new era, both on and off the pitch. But do you think this story casts something of a shadow over that? That the transparency that people would expect from the new FAI maybe isn't quite there?
But it's completely transparent. Like, it's completely transparent. You know, AMRAP approached me on the basis of a number of recommendations. One of whom we now know, and it's as simple as that. It's actually quite a normal way of doing business. And so I don't think it should cast a shadow. Certainly in my own mind, it doesn't cast any shadow. And I suppose that's my view.
Did you have any conversations with Patrick Kennedy during the debt renegotiation?
No.
None whatsoever?
None at all. The only time I spoke with Patrick was recently, when it was in the newspapers, that a conversation he and I would have had on AMRAP approaching me.
And in terms of the delegates tonight, do you think they were satisfied with your answers?
I certainly hope so. You know, so like, I don't have anything to hide in it. I mean, it is what it is. And perhaps, you know, given the extent of the vote in favour of all of the reforms, which probably is as high as people could have expected it or hoped for, that at the margin, this is a non-issue for them.
There you are. That is Roy Barrett, interim chairperson of the FAI, speaking to Nathan Murphy there. Nathan, before you sign off from Abbottstown, he is adamant there on the Patrick Kennedy story. It is a normal way of doing business. There is transparency around Kennedy's recommendation of Barrett to AMRAP.
Well, he certainly feels that the lack of conversations that they had during the renegotiation means that there is transparency and there's no conflict of interest. I think he made that clear from that interview. It's out there. He has made that very clear. But I think there's going to be a lot more questions as to what their personal relationship was, and was there any crossover into the professional relationship. We're talking about the independent chairman of the FAI with a 50 million debt and at no stage having a conversation with the head of their main creditors, Bank of Ireland. That is what Roy Barrett is saying, and we have to take him on his word on that. But I think there's going to be a lot more questions about that over the coming days.
Okay. Nathan Murphy, thank you very much. Long day for you. Cheers.
Thanks, Joe.
That's Nathan Murphy there at Abbottstown. So again, if you're just tuning in, FAI members have this evening voted to accept changes to the association's rules and governance structures that will pave the way for the association to receive around €35 million in state funding, 114 of the 123 present. It was a virtual gathering, endorsed adopting the MOU, 8 voted against, 1 abstained. Very happy to say now, FAI interim CEO Gary Owens joins us on the line. Gary, good evening.
Good evening, guys. How are you?
Yeah, very well. So I presume much relief to get this over the line and get this done.
It's been a long journey, Joe. I think, you know, since we got involved, we started, I suppose, the process back in late February when we joined, you know, and then we had COVID, actually, 19, on the 17th, 18th of March. We had probably had planned to try and get it over the line at the end of April. But it's been a long, long journey, so delighted. It was a really good majority tonight. I think people are really comfortable. We've had a couple of good information meetings in the last 2 weeks, quite extensive, just to make sure that we were clearing the air on a lot of things. People misunderstood what was going on, and I think once we did that, we got a lot of support.
It seemed from the outside there were two big issues. One, the makeup of the board, 6 and 6, we all became very familiar with, 6 independent directors with 6 from the footballing fraternity. Casting vote now with the president is a distinct possibility. And then also the term limits on council members. There was a change to that over the weekend. Those with more than 10 years can now stand again as long as their term ends by 2022. Were they the two big, broadly speaking, obstacles that you met with, Gary, when you were doing those information meetings with people?
Yeah, I think there was probably 4 key changes, Joe. We were basically moving from a council to a general assembly, and that just widens the whole democratic base. So having a more scientific and sort of analytical base for deciding who should be in the membership, and we needed to widen that, and that was in line with FIFA and UEFA best sort of practice. We were putting in the electoral code, which was basically fit and proper conflict of interest skill set test for anybody on committees and on the board. They were the two big ones. And then we had the 6 and 6. And basically, we got the council members extended until the end of July 22. So there was probably 4 key changes that we were proposing. And they were all really linked to really good corporate governance. And I think we were very much involved with all the stakeholders. So it wasn't just the Sport Ireland and the department, but we had UEFA and FIFA. And then in the background, the Bank of Ireland, who were obviously keen in terms of making sure that the governance structures were in place. So I think members actually fully, once we explained to them, I think one of the misunderstandings was who actually controlled the association, and the General Assembly will, which is a sovereign body, and they always have the power to make the decisions. I think what we put in place now is a good governing structure, and now we've got to prove to them that it'll work.
Mm. Where is the association financially now, Gary, is a question a lot of people will have.
Oh, it's struggling, Joe. I mean, we've taken a loan of 24 million from the Bank of Ireland, and we had a plan, and then COVID came, which would have hit us for another 10.5. We're going to get some government support on that. We expected the fans to be back in for the international matches starting next Sunday, actually. So that's not going to happen. So it's going to be very fragile. We need to kind of plan now on the basis that we won't have fans in the grounds for next year as a contingency, and that'll make it quite fragile. It's we don't have a lot of money. The main streams of income are going to be under a lot of pressure. So we just have to be careful about now how we spend it.
Mm. So sponsorship will be all important as well. How close are the FAI to a rebrand or a rename?
Well, we've got our centenary next year, so I think what we definitely need to do is rebuild public trust. So we fully understand that, and I think sponsorship goes with that. And there is a significant amount of opportunity on sponsorship right across all our international teams and in grassroots, actually, because different brands have different interests. When you think about it, we have 4 times the number of players. And the RFU, and good luck to them, are probably 4 times the sponsorship. So we just need to get that balance right. We need to build trust with sponsors. We need to build trust with key stakeholders, including the government. We're going to have the Euros here next year, and that brings a lot of money into the economy. And we need to have, I think, stronger negotiating skills, stronger public trust. And I think that will deliver us the type of sponsorship we deserve and need.
One of the issues which emerged this evening was the news you may have heard there, I don't know when you came in the line, Nathan was talking to Roy Barrett, that the Bank of Ireland Governor Patrick Kennedy recommended Roy Barrett to AMROP. Is that a conflict of interest in your eyes? Is that a corporate governance issue in your eyes, given that Roy Barrett subsequently was negotiating with the Bank of Ireland about FAI debt?
I don't think so, Joe. I mean, I think Amrog basically, I mean, I know Amrog for a long time, and they have a great network to recommend people for different roles. And I think they basically did that. And then Roy went through the nominations committee and was approved by the board. I mean, the Bank of Ireland were our existing bankers. There wasn't a lot of people around who were going to help us deal with the type of problems that we had. They were quite significant, and no one was rushing to the table to try and provide the sort of financial support that we needed. We had a lot of stakeholders in that. So there was the Bank of Ireland, but there was also UEFA and FIFA, and there was Sport Ireland and the Department of Sport. And to be honest, we wouldn't have been able to get over the line without any, all of them actually working together. So we've always been fully transparent about that. And I think we've kind of tried to create a spirit of transparency in relation to what our debt was, exactly where we were getting the funding and what we had to do to be able to satisfy those stakeholders.
Yeah, I suppose, like, so Larry Bass, for instance, of Cabin Teely, he's the chairman and he's on the FAI Finance Committee. And he wrote a letter to Roy Barrett about this issue. And he says that the recommendation from the Bank of Ireland Governor Patrick Kennedy does represent a conflict of interest. The bank we owed more than 28 million to at the time. He says, in governance terms, this is a letter he wrote to Roy Barrett. How is it that this Bank of Ireland person appears to have become a de facto nominations committee member? How is it that a person has a role in recommending you, most importantly, given your first and most important job was to renegotiate the Bank of Ireland debt, did this not create a basic conflict of interest for you, is the question mark. And people will have that question, not least, I think, Gary, because Ireland is such a small country, everybody knows everybody. I mean, when it comes to governance, when it comes to the FAI in particular, we have to be absolutely above reproach. And something like this, honest as it may be, and Roy Barrett said there, this is how business is done, Bank of Ireland governor recommending Roy Barrett for this position, and then Roy Barrett negotiating with Bank of Ireland. Mick Wallace, for instance, this evening said that the FAI should have had a debt write-down. You know, and so in light of the recommendation from Patrick Kennedy, I think Mick Wallace saying that takes on extra weight, you know. We listened to Roy Barrett there, and he's trying to answer the questions, being as honest as possible. But you don't want this around the FAI anymore. None of us want this around the FAI. We don't want to come out in this way either. You know, I mean, how many months are we into it and we find out the Patrick Kennedy link? And all of that, just for obvious reasons, leaves people a little bit uneasy, to say the least. Why are we finding out about this? Why is it coming out this way?
Well, I think, Joe, to be fair, Amrob were the people who were employed to recommend people to the nominations committee. And, you know, Roy went through that process, and Amrob would have reached out to different people, as they probably always do, to sort of achieve that.
Do you think, given the Bank of Ireland situation with the FAI, Amrob should have been going near Patrick Kennedy?
I don't know whether he did or not, to be honest. I don't know the circumstances on whether Patrick rang them or Amrob rang Patrick Kennedy.
Okay, either way, I would put it to you, that phone call shouldn't happen. Bank of Ireland should not be consulted when it comes to an FAI hiring. Like, if we're doing things properly, Bank of Ireland shouldn't be anywhere near that.
Well, I think I would certainly accept the point in terms of potential conflict of interest, but I think what we were left with, I basically came in just as the MOU was being basically signed and had to sort of finalise the arrangements with Bank of Ireland. And quite honestly, Joe, there was nobody else interested in it. We did make one or two conversations. I had one or two conversations with alternatives to see whether or not we could get cheaper financing. And nobody was interested in providing us with the type of support that we needed. Yeah. And we were working constantly with Sport Ireland and the department, and indeed UEFA and FIFA, to try and get the guarantees in place that would actually allow the Bank of Ireland to give us the money. I'd go as far as say it was the only show in town at the time. Now, you know, when we get to a point where we can stabilize the finances, but then all bets are off and we have to provide, you know, proper procurement and go out and find the best source of finance we can. But at that time, we couldn't. I mean, there was nobody available to actually provide us with we were very close to insolvency. We were kind of 2 weeks away from it until we got the money from the bank. So they were definitely the only game in town at the time. Mm.
I accept that as well. But you can see there is an uneasiness with Bank of Ireland recommending somebody for this position, that person ultimately gets the position, and then it's Bank of Ireland that the FA are negotiating with. I mean, that is just an uncomfortable situation, which we've all found out about in the last week or so.
It is, Joe, but I think, I suppose, tonight we want to move on from this, and I know we may have to deal with this, but like tonight was a huge majority in favour of the reforms. And, you know, the position of the association is still fragile financially. So we need to move on with confidence now. We spent a lot of time actually dealing with the whole governance reforms. We spent a lot of time debating it with the key stakeholders. We spent a lot of time actually dealing with the members. And it's now time, I think, to move on and actually run the association, get back to dealing with football.
Yeah, I accept that. But given the history of the association, we have to ask these questions, and we have to hold all of you in those positions to account in so much as we can. This may prompt a closer look at the negotiations between the FAI and the Bank of Ireland.
Well, listen, Joe, I think if anybody else is prepared to put finance on the table, which is more favourable terms than what we have, we'd be delighted to do it. It was difficult enough to get us to the point. We had sort of tough negotiations with the bank. It wasn't an easy process to get them to lend us the type of money that they were, given the state where we were at. So we had a lot of debts to pay over a long period of time. So there was a lot of cleaning up to be done in the association time, and there weren't any other alternatives at the time. And I certainly had one conversation to see whether or not any of the other financial institutions would be interested, and nobody was prepared to even sit down and talk to us. So I think we've got to, I think from the start, from when Roy came in as chairman and indeed our board, we have tried to be open, honest and transparent with everybody all along the journey. And there was a lot of conspiracy theories out there, and they keep coming up. So to be fair, we all we can do is answer the questions.
Sure.
And all we can do is keep going in the way we are. And if somebody comes up with one of the places we were looking for finance was in FIFA and UEFA itself. And even they wouldn't lend us the money.
And should it have been declared, a last point, because I want to ask about one or two other things. Should it have been declared, Gary, the involvement, of Patrick Kennedy, should that have been made public by the FAI? Shouldn't we have found that out in a more transparent way?
I would say, Joe, to be honest, if we'd have thought about it in that way, I would say yes. But it never came up until recently, and we never even saw it as a conflict of interest, because Roy hasn't, as far as I know, Roy hasn't had a conversation with Patrick since then.
Okay.
So I don't think, I think in hindsight, maybe it should have, but, we've had no conversations with Patrick as part of the refinancing, or Roy hasn't. We've had negotiations all the way with the bank, and who've been a great partner of ours. But as I said, they were the only game in town.
Gary, can I ask you about the Finance Committee and the Audit, Risk and Compliance Committee? Because these are two committees are generating headlines. As I understand it, they were set up in October 2019 as part of the general reforms going on. Neither has met, is that right? The Finance Committee hasn't met, and nor has the Audit, Risk and Compliance Committee.
No, I think the Audit, Risk and Compliance Committee. So just bring you back, Joe. So when we were doing the governance reforms, the first people we spoke to were FIFA and UEFA. So they were really our strongest partners in terms of the governance reforms changes that we had to make. They were quite keen on a committee structure, but they were also keen on what we call an electoral code. So part of the reason, there was kind of two reasons. One was the terms of reference on the Finance Committee, or the new board, or the board that were in place, weren't completely happy with it because it undermined their responsibilities in relation to managing the finance of the association. And the second issue was that we were working on what we call a fit and proper test. So there was a lot of committees implemented or actually suggested as part of the reforms. But there was conflicts of interest, there were fit and proper tests, there was skill set tests, which FIFA basically wanted to apply. So we basically put in place the committee structures that were linked to the funding, the restoration of funding, and we actually restored those as quickly as we could. We're now going through a process, actually, between now and December, where we're going to populate the football committees. We're going to have a finance committee. We're going to have a commercial committee. We'll have a remuneration committee, a nominations committee.
Okay.
So all the committees in line with FIFA's best practice and governance are actually going to be implemented. FIFA weren't happy with the outcome in terms of summit committee structures and the rules that applied for people getting on those committees.
Okay.
And that's really the large, that's their two main reasons why they were delayed.
Right, okay. I've been various resignations, like Andrew Doyle, for instance. He said, I'm not entirely sure it's possible to resign from a committee which doesn't exist, but I do so in any event. And then Sean Brody, also a partner in PricewaterhouseCoopers, he stepped down from the Audit, Risk and Compliance Committee in May. He was very frustrated with the lack of progress. So are we at the point where these committees will be meeting very, very soon and getting stuck in and doing their jobs, yeah?
Well, some of them have met. I mean, we have a governance committee, we have the Audit and Risk Committee, we have the NLAC, which is basically the League of Ireland Committee. Some of the committees are already up and running. Nominations Committee is up and running. Those committees are up and running. Most of the committees that were linked to funding, that was linked to the restoration funding, are up and running. All the rest of the committees we're basically going to revisit the recommendations on the football committees, and we're going to put in some additional business committees. And the nominations to those committees, which is key, Joe, is that we get the right people on those committees who have the interests and are not conflicted. And that was one of the issues that FIFA really were very keen for us to implement. And so when we have a target now of having all these committees up and running as part of the constitutional reform, and there will be an electoral code that will sit alongside that. And that means that we will have the right people with the right skill sets who are not conflicted, who are fit and proper, who will sit on all these committees as advisory committees to the board.
Okay. So, with a view to the next couple of months, we have lots of interims in all the various titles. Are you planning to apply for the full-time role of CEO, Gary?
Well, I've always said, Joe, that we've got to the end now today in terms of the reforms. So, you know, I think we set out to basically get the reforms in place. They've been supported by the members tonight. And so, yeah, I'll see where that goes from here.
Okay. Just a final point again. I think this Patrick Kennedy story is going to be bigger than you might suspect. You can see, I mean, last kind of point in all this, you can see why people are suddenly raising an eyebrow. And this is not, if it was different people involved, you know, and when we're talking about the history of this organization, people don't like business being done this way. The whole point of corporate governance, as I understand it, is so that we're above, well, I'm friends with him and I know him and, you know, we play at the golf club and hell, we might go and play at the Oireachtas golf get together. This is how people feel Ireland works too often. And so when a recommendation like this comes from the governor of the Bank of Ireland, who are then negotiating with the FAI, I think that is significant. And, you know, you've Mick Wallace talking about how there should have been a debt write-down. All of this just is not the vibe that you want from a new, open, transparent FAI. So, look, a last word on that, because I really do think a lot of people will look at this and say, that is a conflict, and that shouldn't have happened the way it happened. The Bank of Ireland, given their potential relationship with the FAI and previous relationship with the FAI, nobody from the Bank of Ireland should have been making any recommendations to anybody.
I'd say three things, Joe. I think if you look at the steps we've taken since the independent directors, and indeed our own old board, the current board that were elected last year, they have tried to be open and honest and transparent at every step of this journey. I think I reiterate what I said earlier. At the time, the Bank of Ireland were the only game in town. So,
all the more reason, maybe? All the more reason they should have nothing to do with the hiring of people at the FAI.
You know, knowing what we know now, I think we probably would have said that. But it was still the only game in town. And Roy has been absolutely honest and open about it since he was asked the first question. He even communicated himself to tell someone. So he wasn't trying to hide anything in relation to the fact that Patrick had recommended him. So I think from our point of view, yeah, we are absolutely zero tolerance on proper governance, proper openness and transparency. We want to do that, and we're committed to delivering it. I think the members tonight heard all this, mm-hmm. and they still voted significantly. The majority was 93% on one resolution and nearly 100% on the others. So the members want to now move on, and we want to move on and deal with the issues that we need to deal with. We're talking about this in a week that Stephen Kenny is going to play his first match. They're all out in Abbottstown today, and they're on their way to Bulgaria. And it's a significant time for him and a significant time for Irish football. He has put in 17 new people into his team, and we're really excited about that. And it's time for us to start talking about those sort of things and move on from the governance. And we accept we have to be held accountable for proper openness, transparency, and to have zero tolerance on governance. There's nothing we can do at the moment about what had happened in relation to that situation. But I can tell you quite honestly, the Bank of Ireland were the only game in town. If someone can come along and provide us with better financing, and bear in mind that UEFA and FIFA would have had the capability to do that, but they weren't prepared to.
Okay. Listen, Gary Owens, we appreciate your time. Many thanks.
Not at all, Joe. You're welcome.
Okay. Take a short break.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
The truth about all of the stuff with COVID is, Shane, we have to battle on. We have to rally in the face of COVID as well. Those of us who are under 65, those of us who are healthy, we need to live our lives to some extent. Paul Reid, HSE Chief Executive. How do we stand currently as we face into the flu season and the winter months ahead?
I concur with both of you, actually. I think we need to bring people into winter with a sense of hope and confidence.
News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
Weekday mornings at 7 on News Talk.
Updating school technology with a limited budget can be challenging. That's why at Riggle Learning, we're now offering great deals with flexible finance options on a range of Windows 10 devices from only €12 a month. As Microsoft's only gold partner for education in Ireland, Riggle Learning will deliver ready-to-go Windows devices with school apps and requested restrictions in place to keep your students and their data safe. To find out more and order now, visit rigglelearning.ie. Finance from €12 per month, 36 monthly instalments, no deposit required. Terms and conditions apply.
In Tuesday's Farming Independent, the growing fears over a shortage of beef kill capacity in the meat factories. We meet the Connemara sheep farmer who transformed his holding into a thriving agritourism attraction. And we look at a €1.5 million land sale in Kildare. The Farming Independent, real stories worth paying for. In print or subscribe at independent.ie.
Psychology, performance analysis, sports therapy and coaching all contribute to elite performance in sport. At Portobello Institute, we offer full-time and blended learning honours degrees in each of these sporting disciplines. Affordable and accessible online study, small group lectures and practicals are now enrolling at Portobello Institute. So talk to an expert about our full-time and blended learning sports degree courses at our virtual open sessions. Visit portobelloinstitute.com for details.
Your family deserves an adventure. It's time to seize the moment. Grab the family and the dog and uncover hidden gems on your doorstep in County Leash. Go medieval at the stunning Rock of Dunamase. Blow away the cobwebs cycling the Schlieve Blooms. Or picnic in the magnificent grounds of Emo Court and Parklands. With so many breathtaking experiences to choose from, Ireland's ancient East has never felt bigger. Make a break for it. Discoverireland.ie.
Picture yourself relaxing in one of Ireland's finest hotels, overlooking breathtaking scenery in the heart of Connemara. Imagine yourself at Ballinahinch Castle, enjoying miles of wonderful trails, brisk walks on local beaches, and cycling the Connemara Greenway. Cozy up with dinner in the pub, or enjoy a book or board game in front of an open log fire. Surround yourself with space this autumn and book now at ballinahinchcastle.com.
We've built our latest Citroën C5 Aircross SUV with more features than ever before. Travel in comfort with advanced comfort suspension, a built-in dash cam, individual rear seat, best-in-class boot space, active lane assist, road sign recognition, touchscreen display, 5-year unlimited mileage warranty. And right now, get all this and more from just €205 a month. The Citroën C5 Aircross SUV, now with 0% APR finance. Visit your nearest Citroën dealer or find out more at citroen.ie. Citroën. Finance by hire purchase. Minimum deposit 20%. Lending criteria, T's and C's apply.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. As obnoxiously passionate about soccer as Frank Lampard after the final whistle. Gamble responsibly. See Dunluey.net.
Now, to matters on the field, Stephen Kenny obviously has a game to play on Thursday against Bulgaria, followed by Finland on Sunday. We have Damien Delaney with us. Good evening.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Very well. The good news, if you missed it, is that the FAI have passed the MOU. So 35 million big ones coming your way, FAI.
Party type.
Yeah. So Stephen Kenny had, what, hour and a half today, give or take, training session. He'll have another training session tomorrow, and then I presume they'll train at the stadium on Wednesday, which is not much of a training session at all. So I want you, with the professional footballer's experience, to dampen down expectations a touch. What can we possibly expect a new manager to get across to his players in 2.5 training sessions?
The path, I suppose, that he wants to take, where he wants to take the team, his ideas. He'll be very conscious not to overload the players with a ton of information. There will be some video meetings. There will be some individual meetings, I would have thought. I know Keith Andrews is in there as well, and Keith's pretty vocal. So I know that there will be an awful lot going on behind the scenes, but he'll be very, very careful not to overload players with information. And him and his staff will definitely be taking that approach, just to drip feed in information. They know that they can't get it all fixed overnight, or not fixed, but you know, they can't just, you know, get it all done overnight, I suppose. So look, he'll just be drip feeding in a couple of ideas, but a lot of his talking will be done on the training pitch, you know, insofar as with his actions, you know, how he sets up training is going to determine, a lot of the players will be able to read between the lines of what he expects, how he expects his teams to play. So the players would have to be acute enough to read between the lines in that sense.
Did you ever have any experiences as a player of going from a fairly basic style of football into something a bit more expansive and elaborate? And if so, how long did it take?
Yeah, I mean, elaborate is probably further down the road. And I think, if anyone's expecting us to show up against Bulgaria in a couple of days' time and all of a sudden turn into Bayern Munich or turn into, like, Pep Guardiola's Man City, that's not the case. But
Damien, what I'm expecting. what I demand.
Yeah, I know. And listen, we'd all love to see it. But look, all I'm looking for when I'm watching a Bulgaria game is some signs that we started something and some patterns emerging, and hopefully we'll see rather than hear what Stephen Kenny's trying to do. We can see the little things emerging, and as I said, look, this is very, very early stages in a long kind of job for Stephen to get Irish football kind of into the 21st century.
Yes, so I think signs is a good way of putting it, and just an intent to move things along. What are those signs? Does this start with, you know, Randolph giving it out to the centre halves and playing under pressure, regardless, that kind of stuff?
I wouldn't have thought so, no. But I think that if he wants us to play football, and if Bulgaria don't kind of press high up the pitch, then there's no point in us just shelling the ball into the Bulgaria where they've got 8 players or 9 players in their own half, and we're just kicking it into a 50-50 situation. If Bulgaria do drop off, you're kind of looking to see, okay, if we give it to the centre halves. And then I'll be looking for the midfield player straight away. I'll be looking at the wide player straight away. And I'll be thinking, what do the central midfield players do? What's the number 6 position? What's he taking up on the pitch? The 2 number 8s, or the number 8, the number 10, depending on what system he wants to play. What the number 9 is doing. And if you just watch that over and over again, you'll see patterns emerging. That if the left side centre back has it, if it's 3 at the back, if it's 4 at the back, you just want to see, where does the 6 go? Where does the 8 go? What are the 2 wide players doing? Are the 2 wide players staying wide and hugging the touchline? Are they coming inside into the number 10 role? Is one coming in and one staying out? And what you'll see as the game develops, that you want to see that kind of cohesion and that organisation. Again, these are very small things. I'm not saying that this is crazy or anything like that. These are small signs, but they're the first steps towards Stephen implementing the way that he wants to play.
I mean, in many respects, the best signal of intent, in so much as Stephen Kenny can control the many variables across a 90-minute match, will be his starting 11 that he names. I mean, in many ways, that's where you can deduce the most and extrapolate the most regarding what he's hoping to do. So who do you want to see in that starting 11 and why?
I think my midfield 3 would maybe Malumbi, maybe Conor Hourihan. You know what? It doesn't matter to me, actually, who plays, because who plays is irrelevant. What I want to see is a system, and what I want to see is the players implementing what Stephen asked them to do, and the players being comfortable that knowing that everywhere that the ball is on the pitch, they know exactly where they're supposed to be, with and without the ball. And you'll see the patterns emerging. So who plays, I won't say it's irrelevant, but you know, he's obviously going to want to make a statement. Mm. The other thing I'm looking for as well is the confidence of the players, you know, that they look confident. They look like, and I've heard that Stephen's very good at this, at instilling confidence in players. And I'm sure in his training sessions, just the way that he treats the players, with the respect, the way he speaks to them like adults, treats them like adults, tells players that he expects them to behave in a certain way and with a certain level of confidence. Mm. I'm just looking forward to seeing, you know, chin up, chest out, shoulders back, and lads stepping on the pitch and running around and looking like they enjoy themselves, no matter who plays.
Mm. It was interesting, Darren Randolph was speaking today to the media, and in some ways players are the best litmus test, or the best way of, you know, getting a feel for what messages they're on the receiving end of. Because, you know, a manager can do a press conference and communicate brilliantly what he wants, but then if you ask the players, they're not able to repeat that, so ultimately it's a bit pointless. But Darren Randolph was asked, you know, what kind of team are we going to be under Stephen Kenny, and he said possession team. Possession-based team. And so that is, you know, you boil it down to a simple message, and so Randolph has that, so you suspect all the players will have that. And, you know, I'm not sure we would have ever really been a quote-unquote possession-based team. I mean, not in my lifetime, not in my memory.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think that's just years of Ireland doing things a certain way, and it brought us a certain amount of success. But I think that success had a ceiling, or that route had a ceiling to it. And hopefully Stephen is putting us on the path now to a path that really has no ceiling, that we can evolve and change and adapt and become a better footballing nation and more easy on the eye, and kind of, as I said before, join the 21st century in football. And we're not going to dominate the ball. You know, I can't imagine for a second that we're going to show up against Bulgaria and have 80% possession. No way. But what I am looking to see is that the times that we do have possession, we don't squander it straight away, and we don't give it away, or we don't go for the jugular. You know, we have to look comfortable. Even if Bulgaria have 60% and we have 40%, the 40% that we have, I'll be looking to see that we're comfortable and we are able to probe, we are able to recycle the ball, we are able to switch the play, we are able to come inside, create overloads, and then attack down the other side. I mean, all that now sounds, you know, very, very, you know, full on, but that's kind of, when we remove the ceiling, that's the path that we want to start down.
Okay, that's an interesting way of looking at it then. So it's not necessarily what percentage of possession we have at the end of the match, it's what we do when we have the ball. Are we showing certain signs of trying to do the right things?
Right.
What are his bigger selection dilemmas? Certainly the Coleman-Doherty one jumps to mind for everybody. I mean, Stephen Kenny was making the point next year we might have four Premier League right backs.
Yeah. And look, that's what the manager gets paid. What he gets paid, because he has to make those decisions. But he'll have an idea, and his staff will have an idea of how they want to play, and they'll look at the players available to them. And regardless of whether a player is playing every week in the Premier League or not, if a player fits his style and a player fits the way that he sees his team or suits his team, then he plays that player. And we just have to trust the manager that he's picking this player that gives him what he wants, because we have to develop a style, and you know, you can't just throw 11 players on the pitch and just hope the style emerges. You've got to pick certain players for certain positions. But for me, you know, looking at the way his Dundalk teams played, you know, when you think of Massey and Gannon, his fullbacks do like to join in, you know, and he likes to, you know, those two guys haven't played against him, create carnage. And then they obviously have that sitter, that big number six, or that physical presence sitting as a number six, if this is the route that he goes, if he implements that same style of play. So for me, Matt Doherty suits that perfectly. You know, he's one of the best, if not one of the best attacking right backs in the league. He's just earned a great big money move to a big football club. So for me, Matt Doherty has to be one of the first names on the team sheet.
Mm. That's a tough decision then, with, you know, because Seamus Coleman is such a brilliant captain. Mm-hmm. That is a tough decision to make right off the bat.
Absolutely, but look, that's it. That's what he gets paid to do. You know, there's no easy kind of decision over those two. If he drops Coleman and plays Matt Doherty, people are going to be saying what they're going to say, and vice versa. But I think you just got to go with you know, the player who's informed, the player that is kind of up. I won't say up and coming because he's 28, but he's kind of, you know, has a big future in front of him, and he's playing great football at the minute.
Yeah, no, he sure is. I mean, And your boy Jose Mourinho is going to do his best to ruin him, but I think even Matt will be able to withstand the nonsense, you know? Don't go past the halfway line, Matt. He won't listen to that.
Once you watch this Amazon Prime documentary, you're going to phone and apologise.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. There was a snippet today on Twitter, which honestly, did you see the thing on Twitter today?
I did, yeah.
Shocking.
Listen, you know.
Is it all staged?
No, I don't know, but he's sitting in his office. Is it Radio 5 Live or something? He's listening
to... No more Radio 5 Live. It's like the two lads from Amazon Prime acting. That never happened, honestly.
We'll see.
Any other last team selection? Or the right back one seems like the trickiest one. Everything else will probably be a bit more massageable.
Yeah, it does. But look, Stephen's going into a game. He's obviously going to be... conscious that a lot of players are pretty early in the pre-season. A lot of the championship players maybe haven't played for quite a time. So, look, maybe he's just going to get a feel. But this meet and greet is basically that. You know, he wants to meet his players, get to know them, and start the feed of information or the drip of information into the players. That's going to take time to kind of marinate for the lads, and hopefully everyone buys into it. But look, it's an exciting time, it really is, and I'm really looking forward to it. I'm not expecting miracles, and I can't stress that enough. People need to understand that this is a kind of a long terms are wrong, but kind of, you know, the first step on a journey with no limits, really, and that's kind of how I see it, and hopefully Stephen can bring us along that path pretty quickly.
Very good. It'll be nice to finally have a game to talk about very soon. Damien Delaney, thanks so much, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See dunluie.net.
Missing this?
When that didn't materialise, I think both Paulie and myself probably looked at each other and kind of thought, what next?
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-all-fits branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20, code pod20, for 20% off your first product.